It's the Surrey Hills Soul Train for a Thursday evening, and welcome to the First Class Lounge. We do this every Thursday night between 9 and 10, and each week we have a special guest and get in a little bit more in-depth into them with music and conversation. And this week, my guest, this is quite an honour, actually. When I really first got into soul music, Sherry Brown was one of the first artists that I heard and really did kind of influence the way my soul-inspired taste in music went. So it's a great honour to welcome the one and only Sherry Brown. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
That was a good
It's
interview.
My pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much. Whereabouts in, you're over in the States. Whereabouts do you reside these days?
In Los Angeles, California.
Ah, yes, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet it's nice and warm over there, isn't it, at the moment?
It is. You know, it's been a little chilly off and on, but today's really a beautiful day. In fact, they say it's going to start warming up.
Oh, that's what we like to hear. We just hope that happens in the UK very soon. It's been very, very cold recently here. So let's hope that the weather does improve and summer is on its way. We'll look forward to it. That's good. Now, let's find out a little bit more about you, Sherry. First of all, how did it all start? What sort of age did you kind of think to yourself, I want to be a singer?
You know, when I was a little girl, pre-elementary school, I used to think I was going to be a singer. I used to pretend like I was singing in front of, holding a microphone and, when your television's off, I tell the story. And you look at yourself in the mirror, excuse me, and, I would pretend like I was singing.
Yeah.
And, hold on for 1 minute, hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry about that. I had to clear my throat. And I would pretend like I was singing, and I would tell people I was going to be a singer. But then that became more of a hobby. And I taught myself how to play the guitar when I was in the fifth grade. So that would have been 10 years old for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I still didn't think I was going to be a singer. I said I'm going to be a singing lawyer. Because I wanted to be a lawyer for up until my high school years.
Okay.
And but in high school, right after I graduated from high school, I entered this really popular talent show, similar to American Idol, but much earlier on, and it wasn't televised, and it was citywide, and you would go through this whole process of sending in audition tapes, and then each category would pick the top 20 performers to go to the semifinals, and then out of the semifinals, out of those 20, they picked the top 3 to go to the finals, which was held at the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow.
The famous Hollywood Bowl in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And they would actually perform and compete there. And so many different folks from here, around my age, my peers, went through that process and competed. Patrice Rushen actually was in it 1 year and
won. Oh, really?
And Lynn Davis, that did a lot of singing with George Duke, she was in it 1 year. And there are just a number of folks that had their beginnings way back when that actually competed. So I competed, and I made it to the top 3 finals, and I actually won.
Wow.
And my experience with the audience on that stage at the Hollywood Bowl, and the response that I got from the audience, and then winning on top of that, just cemented the idea that this is taking over. This is my this is my destiny. The whole idea of becoming a lawyer, that I put that behind me and went full blast. And even at that performance, I'd become friends with the late Sarita Wright.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was mentoring me kind of, and And she was even in the audience supporting me. And so between my family and friends and those who I, you know, knew made friends, it was just an overwhelming experience. And that is when I decided, you know, that I really wanted to do this. Although I've been singing and playing my guitar and it being in talent shows before that time.
Can you remember what you sung in the final then? What was the track?
Yeah. So I wrote two songs. So I wrote my first song when I was in the sixth grade. So when I was 11.
Wow.
And
really?
And I had, pardon me?
That's amazing. When you were 11.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wrote now it's real interesting because when I wrote that song, I only had two strings on my guitar, because, you know, for those of you who know guitar, well, for those of you who don't know about a guitar has six strings, and so mm-hmm. all of my strings had broken except for two, right? And so it was this one summer, and I had some really good friends that were neighbors of mine, and we practiced every day during the summer, and we were going to be the next Supremes, so the singing group, the Supremes, another legendary group.
Yeah,
and so it was me and three other of my friends, and we would practice every day. And I wrote that song, and they were the background singers. And one person had a drum pad, other one had a little tiny finger cymbals, and one of the other friends was hitting the top of, like, a, you know, those big old round cookie tins that you take the top off. She was hitting it. You know, she was hitting it like it was a tambourine, right?
Yeah.
And so that, you know what, in fact, I have my guitar here, right?
Go on, are you going to play it?
But check this out. I'm going to play it the way I remember playing it.
Hey, this is good.
With my two strings, right?
Go on.
And if I may.
Of course.
Okay, So now just envision this. I have my guitar, and I'm only going to play the two strings that were the top strings. I'm even going to try to sing it the way I thought I sounded, right?
Go.
Changes in the background, we'll say, everything just changes. And I go, inside of me, tell me what. And they go, what? Then I come, what can I do to make you feel the same way too?
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey.
And so I wrote that when I was 11, right?
Wow.
And so by the time I had performed at the Hollywood Bowl, I had just graduated from high school. I graduated in that earlier part of June, I believe, and the performance of the competition was either in June or July.
Yeah.
And I had, of course, my songs had graduated from that I Really Love You Baby by that time. Because I used to play my guitar. I went to an all-girls high school, and I used to play my guitar at every outing that I could, including at school and at lunchtime, you know, and I had a great audience, you know, they liked my music, and the more I knew someone liked it, the more I played.
Yeah, I was just going to say, did you kind of have a following at school then, with people saying, oh, yeah?
I did, I really did, and it was so much fun. My teachers would even let me sit in front of the class before the class started to play a song that I had just written. I'd be so excited. I would say, can I play this song? I just wrote it. I would work on my music and write it and get up early in the morning and do my homework or do it on the way to the bus, on the way to school. So anyway, back to the Hollywood Bowl, I wrote two songs One's called You're Together, and then the other one's called Here and There, Everywhere. I think I'm especially Here and There, Everywhere. I was talking to someone recently about reworking that song, finishing it, you know, yeah, as I remember it. But anyway, there was an orchestra. So the composer did an arrangement for my songs that were original songs, and I played my acoustic guitar with the orchestra playing behind me on the stage of the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was magical to me. I can remember it just, I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was magical. And there was even one part of the song where I was singing and everyone erupted and they went, so I was like, wow. So that, I mean, it's a bit of a story, but it's a story I remember so well.
So when you leave school then, did you pursue another career or did you stay in music then?
I stayed in music. Mm. I took some time off from school and for about 6 months and worked a regular job, because what I was doing was I was going to the recording studios and doing demos.
Yeah.
And so I needed to raise the monies to do that. And so I worked so that I could do that. And then after 6 months, I went to one of our city colleges and took music classes. And then things started to really take off. So I think I was in school for about 2 years.
And I think it was kind of, when did you get your big breakthrough? It was 1981, wasn't it? When it really kind of, did you?
That's when the album, my first album came up. But I was doing things before then. I co-wrote Haven't You Heard with Patrice Rushen, and I think that came out in 1978.
Yeah.
So, before I got my deal with Capitol Records, I was already doing some other things.
Yeah, you were kind of doing arranging and writing before that then.
Yes, I was doing that and then performing and working on my demos at the same time.
Gotcha.
And so, 1981 is when...
1981, when you got your you kind of got your big break, and with Capitol Records.
Yes.
I mean, Capitol is a massive label, and for a soul artist who's just kind of starting out, getting a deal with Capitol must have been amazing for you.
It was. I mean, it was a dream come true. It was something I always talked about. You know, when I was in high school, I used to tell folks. And even though I didn't consciously say, okay, this is for sure what I'm going to do. Well, let me think about it. I think I was just out of high school and I was telling folks that this is what I'm going to do. I'm just remembering now. So it was just out of high school and folks would say, you know how hard it is. You know what the competition's like. And I said, no, I believe this is my calling. This is what I'm going to do. You know, I have a lot of faith, and I'm working very hard at it. And those two things collectively is what really, I believe, you know, took me through to that point. Mm. And when I signed my deal with Capitol, I remember folks said, you know, this is during the time that the music industry and the entertainment industry closes down. Mm. They go on hiatus. And so it was right before Thanksgiving, and that's actually when I got my deal.
Wow.
And I was actually I signed my deal in November, and then I remember I used to always tell folks, when I find the right man that I'm supposed to be with, I'm going to get my record deal. And so I signed my record deal, and that same month I got married to my husband. We've been married 40 years.
Wow.
And so, and thank you. And so we went right into the studio. We were in the studio right before Christmas.
So had you
had you got
sort of an album planned before the deal, or did you get the deal and say, right, we're going to work on an album now?
No, when I signed, I already they heard a demo of mine that had two songs, originals, that I had worked on.
Yeah.
And by that time, I had enough, I had more than an album's worth of material.
Mm.
And what I had been doing is, they're a really good friend of mine, he's like my brother, Jim Gilstrap. He's known for Swing Your Daddy, you know, one of the hits that is way back when. We're really good friends. And so I remember that we would get together and I would bring my guitar. He had a studio, you know, he had a studio at his home. And I'd sit down and I'd play the song and he'd come up with some arrangements. And so we would do these little demos with the arrangements and my vocals, and he'd sing background with me. Mm. And we had done about five, maybe six of them. And then the two that I presented to Capitol Records, they were, we actually went into the recording studio and I worked, did that. And it's something, because some of the folks that worked on my demos, it was just amazing. And they were friends of mine. It was Patrice Rushen, the late Ricky Lawson, Paulina da Costa was on one of the songs, I believe. Abraham Laborio, then another bass player, Curtis Robinson Jr. We had the James Brown's horn players, and those were some. And then, you know, Jim Gilstrap, Patrice Rushen, and Sarita Wright, they were all working with me on the different songs.
Sure.
For the demo. Yeah. And so that last demo, we went and presented it to Capitol Records. We actually recorded it in Conway Recording Studios in Hollywood. They're a really well-known studio.
Well, I mean, with that lineup of people, you kind of couldn't fail, really. You know, you were going to, you know, quite a star-studded backing of people behind you. It was going to succeed, and your first album, Straight Ahead, I remember rightly on that album cover, there is a guitar there, isn't there? You've got your famous guitar next to you on the album.
Yes, I'm playing acoustic guitar. Yes, yes, that's a part of my signature. I mean, that I insisted on that. It's like, well, you don't have to.
and I mean that album. I mean, you know, I can't remember when I first. I kind of got into the music in the mid '80s, and was inspired by a few DJs here in the UK playing on mainstream radio stations, having a, you know, a 2-hour soul slot every week. And you know, I remember hearing that album for the first time. Some tracks on it. I think, you know, Everything You Do, It's a Pleasure, they were the ones that nothing Do You Wrong, all those were kind of ones that really, you know, really stood out for me, and they were an excellent, you know, the whole album was really, really good. But
Thank you. You
very, very quickly then moved on in 1982 and brought another album out, didn't you, which for me was even better than the first. It really was.
It
was just amazing. Was that sort of purposely done, where you bring one album out and then the following year get another one under your belt?
Well, it was at that time. That was kind of like a formula that was followed. You had your first album, you released it, and then, you know, around the same time that next year, you would release your second album.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we were slated to do the third album, but when it was time to do the third album, some of the personnel at Capitol changed, executives, some of the executives, and those that were the shot callers were no longer in charge. And that's who I had the relationship with, you know. They brought me into the company, so
sure.
There was no relationship with the new executive that had come in, and that because we were planning, we were talking to producers and about the next album, the third album. I think I was in Europe. I was in Italy with my manager, and I had been doing, I did a 5-week-old, a 5-week, not 5-week-old, but a 5-week USO tour, where you go and you perform for the military. You perform for military all over the world. And so I told them, send me somewhere where nobody wants to go. and that's what I really wanted to do that. So I ended up doing this tour in Italy, Egypt, Israel, Germany.
Wow.
And we stopped over in England just for a little bit of a promotional tour. But that was not a part of the USO tour. And so here I was performing in the, you know, the Sahara, the Sinai Desert. Going 100-something miles with a military jeep escort, you know, riding in their jeep through the Gaza Strip.
Wow.
I brought that up to say that I was actually in Italy at the time as a part of that tour when I found out that Capital wasn't going to be renewing, they weren't going to sign me for a third album.
I've heard that before with quite a few artists where, you know, they've had deals and they, you know, perhaps will put 3 or 4 albums out, but there is then a sudden change in management and it all falls through. And it really is such a shame, that is. It really is.
Right, because I couldn't figure out why they didn't send any product with me. Because what happened, or even a way for the military guys and some of the women that were there, but it was mostly men, they didn't have access to being able to purchase it. And so it was at one point in time, there was a long line when I was in Italy of the Italian army. They were in line waiting to get like a signature, an autograph, and they wanted to give me their address because they wanted to get the album. And I was talking to my manager and I was like, I'm confused why there's no support from Capitol. But I didn't know at the time that they had decided not to pick up the contract for the third year. And I was actually in Italy when I found out.
Wow.
No warning. We were there, it was in March, and, you know, we were ready to get back into the studio as soon as I got back. And so it was pretty devastating for me. You know, that was a really rough time.
Yeah.
I can say in my life. You know, so,
I mean, for me, that second album, Got to Get Away, just blew my mind when I first heard that.
Really gonna run out, gotta get away. I love that song too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the second album, right?
Yeah.
And that was one of the songs that Jim Gilstrap and I had demoed in his little home recording studio.
It's just the orchestra in that, the backing of that, it just makes it. You know, your voice is there, but that backing is just,
thank you.
It's timeless. It really is timeless, that sort of song.
Thank you. That was Andre Fisher produced that second album. And then my mentor, he was my music director for both of the albums, and Alexander Thomas. Alex used to play with Earth, Wind & Fire, a horn player, trombone player, with one of the original horn players. And so, you know, that was just, you know, that was a lot of that was Andre. Richard Rudolph produced the first one, Straight Ahead, which is really interesting because I never had the opportunity to meet Minnie Riperton.
Oh.
And she influenced me tremendously.
I was going to say, actually, and who sort of influenced you over the years? Who, you know, was the key
there's,
people?
There's three artists that, in fact, this album is dedicated to them, and Stevie Wonder is one of them, Dionne Warwick, and then the late Minnie Riperton.
Amazing.
And so I didn't have an opportunity to meet Minnie. I know Stevie played the harmonica on the second album on on my way home, which was like, oh my gosh. I was like, oh my gosh. That was like a dream come true. But I had already met Stevie before that, actually. And so I never met Dionne Warwick. I know people that are good friends with her. Yeah. But I did get a message from her about 3 weeks ago.
Really?
A really good friend of mine. A new friend of mine is a really good friend of hers, mm-hmm. and has worked with her professionally. And I had asked if he would get the album to her because I wanted her to know that she was one of those that I'm dedicating the album to. So he did get it to her.
Brilliant.
But and that was, I got that to her before the album release, before March of this year, before February actually. And so I hadn't heard anything. So a couple of weeks ago, he called me and he says, I guess who I got a call from today? I'm like, and I didn't have a clue who he was talking about. He said, Dionne called and said she loves your music and thank you for the dedication.
Wow.
I was like, oh my gosh, because she's not out here where I live. She's in another state. I'm like, oh my gosh. I said, well, can I share that with people? Oh my God. So, oh my goodness!
So, after those two albums, there was a massive gap, really, wasn't there? What sort of happened after that?
So, and you know, this is interesting. I don't think I've shared this with anyone. One of the things that happened when I lost my deal with Capitol Records, everyone knew that another label would pick me up.
Yeah.
Immediately, you know, all of my business associates, my business manager, who was big time. I mean, he represented Prince and the Jacksons, you know, so he knew what was happening with talent and what was happening out there. And he was like, oh, no problem. You know, you'll get picked
you'll
up
get somewhere else. Yeah.
And I didn't. And so I was in the studio working on new demos. And the interesting thing is, and I share this with folks, I changed or try to change who I was and what I did to conform to what was commercially accepted at that time.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. And it didn't feel that great to me. And so then what happened is I started to have kids, and so I decided that I would, you know, be a mom and still do what I do. So I was still in the studio and writing, I was still doing some behind the scene kind of things, and then working at different demos. And so I do finish a demo and submit it to someone, and it was like, nope, don't like it, you know. And then after my children had gotten older, I decided I am not going to conform. I'm going to do what feels good to me. And people will get it. And so I did a couple of independent projects, probably two or three. I worked on a children's album, which is available on iTunes, Apple. It's called We're All Only Children. That's timeless.
Yeah.
During a time when my kids were, they recorded on it with me. Now they're young adults with their own children. And my husband and I did a children's book that, it has to do with anti-bullying, with a friend of ours that used to be with Disney. Yeah. And they were very successful. That was successful. And then I started to concentrate on some new material. So the first big thing for me was Messages from the Heart, which came out, I guess, in 2016, maybe. And it came out on Expansion. It has some really, really nice stuff.
Yeah,
and so
Expansion picked you up, didn't they? And you know,
yes,
Good Friday.
Yes, and it's, and so what's happening is, yes, and what happens is that it's music that's dedicated to the story of these women in this book called Messages from the Heart. And so now, years later, this is kind of like a follow up. It's called Messages from the Spirit is the book, and then the music is Messages from the Spirit, the collective. And it's dedicated to young adult women and their stories of overcoming life challenges. And so there's a song dedicated to each woman and their story. And the thing that's beautiful about this project for me, it's a combination of young and, I say, seasoned. So I'm collaborating and working with Patrice Rushen and Jim Gilstrap still and Dwight Trouble. And then my children are involved, and my daughter and my son, and I have two nieces and a nephew, and a couple of other young women who are telling their stories, and they're actually featured on the song that's dedicated to the story. So I call it a gumbo mix. It is so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Nigel, it's so much fun to be able to have the younger energy and my youthful energy still and work with my peers still. And I feel like this is one of my best endeavors. One of my best, yes.
Yeah, yeah. How did the tie-up with Expansion come then? Did Ralph sort of approach you and say that, you know, come on, give us some more music? How did that come about?
What happened? You're talking about for this particular new one, this new project?
Just the whole thing with Expansion, because you've done actually quite a bit with Expansion, haven't you? It's been quite a nice relationship that you've had over the last few years.
Yes, I think what happened is I reached out to Ralph, and we kind of kept in contact over the years, you know, and I think if I remember correctly, I may have approached him and with some things and music and you know, I love Ralph and his truthfulness, you know, and it was, well, yeah, it just doesn't fit our audience, and so this is like years ago, so as I'm remembering, yeah, it's years ago. And so when Messages from the Heart came up, I had reached back out to him, and there was a number of things going on at the time.
Yeah.
I had there was a reissue of both of my Capitol albums on CD. I did one, you know, they licensed it to me, and then Ralph Expansion did the same thing. They licensed it where both albums were on one CD.
Yeah.
And then it started off with just, let's do a single and add it as part of a compilation. So when the book project started, I approached Ralph about it. So when this, and then what happened, what, 3 or 4 years later, when we finally finished this project, I thought about Ralph. We actually were talking to other companies. And I said, well, let's reach out to Ralph again and see what he says. And as I was continuing. And so it just felt the best, you know. And we already had a working relationship from the previous project. So
yeah,
that's
it's kind of a nice follow-on, isn't it? It's a nice follow-on to carry on.
Yes, and you know, just nice folk, you know, Richard Searling. And then when I came right before the Messages from the Heart CD was released, yes, I had come out there and did a tour. I mean, not a tour, I opened up for one of the shows. At Indigo 2, Rare Grooves.
Yeah,
I can't remember the title.
The Expansion guys organized was now. I know Richard and Ralph
did. I opened up
quite a lot of dues anyway. Yes, So
I opened up for, what was it, the Valentine Brothers, Gene Korn, and the late Leon Ware.
What a lineup.
Oh my God, it was just so special. I mean, you all are special out there. So, I have shared this quite often as of late, because I tell folks, and I tell people out here too, in interviews, you know, you all out there gave my music life again, not once, but at least twice.
Go on, carry on.
I didn't have a clue how well my old Capitol catalog was doing out there. I had no clue.
Really?
Oh my gosh, I had no clue, Nigel. When I went and did the first one, Indigo 2, oh my gosh, I just hit the, what is it? just hit the strings for the opening of It's a Pleasure. And people reacted and they were singing all the songs. And I was like, they knew the lyrics. I was like, wow.
I just remember in the days when I used to first go to a sort of a gig that Richard would put on close to where I used to live, and he'd put one of your tracks on and the floor would just fill and everybody would get up dancing. It didn't matter what the beat was, they would just want to be on the dance floor listening and dancing to your music. And I remember that in sort of like the mid 80s. Yeah. You know, those two albums, the mid 80s for me was very much when I got into music. I think kind of soul music was at its height. And for you to still have albums that were being played in the clubs 4, 5, 6 years after they'd been released and to pull the audience onto the dance floor that you did was you know, just knew that those albums just stood the test of time, and you know, to this day they still do. It's amazing.
And that's something, because you know, here in the States, you go to a party or a dance hall, you know, not a dance hall but a club, and people are up against the wall, you know, yeah, just checking everything out. Mm. And when I came out there, when I think it was the second year, the year after I did Indigo 2, I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but the second year we did Blackpool.
Yeah, you did. Yes.
At the Hilton.
The Hilton, yeah.
Yes, and so I opened up for, the Valentine's Brothers were there again, and then from Five Star, Kenny Burke was the headliner. Yeah. And so it was amazing that all the little spots and coffee shops and bars in the Hilton were turned into clubs.
Yeah.
And so after the show that Saturday night at the Hilton, I decided, let me go and check this out. And so I had gone into made a couple of stops, different DJs just rotating in, playing music.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. People were off. They were on the dance floor. They were dancing. They didn't care if they had a partner or not. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome.
Right. We just danced on our own. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the energy was incredible. I mean, I was on such a natural high being in that. I'm hoping somebody will call me to come back out there when travel is good again to do,
fingers crossed,
do another, you know, to do something else, because it was just, I love to entertain, I love to share my music, and the audience makes a difference. We feed off the audience, you know.
Yeah.
And you guys were just so awesome. And the other thing about this new album, it's exactly 40 years after the release of my first Capitol record.
Of course. Yeah, it is, isn't it? 40 years.
It's exactly 40 years. Wow. And I feel that as much work and time and preparation was put into this project, if not more, than those first two albums. All of the different things I've done in between.
How long did it take you to do this latest album, then, Messages for the Spirit? Is it something that you've been kind of looking at doing for a couple of years, or is it just a year or 6 months? How long did it take you?
I actually worked on it with the book and the music 3 years.
Wow.
3 years. And so
worth the
wait. We just did one song at a time. There were a couple of times when we maybe did two or three at a time when we were in the studio with the live musicians, you know. Yeah. You want to utilize that time. Mm. While they're there. So we did that. And the cover of the album, is the art on that is done, it's from a painting that was done by a well-known artist named Charles Bibbs.
Oh, okay.
And he did one of Ramsey Lewis's albums years ago, Something Nights, he was telling me. So when we were talking about this, the album, we had got, you know, started working on it. One of the first songs was I Choose Love, which is the one that Patrice Rushen and I co-wrote. Mm. So I was telling him about it. And then he got very interested. He said, he told me about the album cover he did for Ramsey Lewis. And he says, you know, let's do a collaboration on your new album. And so we spent a whole year with him sending me parts of his sketches. And then I would send him parts of some of the music that was being done. And we'd go back and forth, and we were inspired by that back and forth, what we each received from each other. And so when he finished the painting, he calls it Love Is. And he said it's one of his biggest pieces right now.
Wow, it is beautiful. And it's a beautiful cover. Have you got a favorite on the album then? Is the one track
a favorite on the album?
I'll tell you what mine is when you say.
You know. You know, it's interesting.
I've got you on the spot.
There are so many, Nigel, there's so many favorites on this album for me. Mm. Because each one has a different story. And we came about it, each song, differently. Mm. And so it changes.
Depending on what the mood is, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I know it's such a cliche, but I was mentioning earlier in our conversation that one of my mentors, a music director, was one of the original trombone players, horn players for Earth, Wind & Fire. And so I was like in junior high when he first started mentoring me. He happened to be a neighbor of mine, but he's older than me, right? And he would be, when he was a young guy, and I was much even younger, he would practice his trombone every day. And, you know, as a kid, you listen, oh, there he goes. And there goes Alex again playing that trombone. But he was doing the scales every day. And he got to be so good. He did a lot of work for Motown and did a lot of sessions and a lot of playing for artists that were touring, you know, Chaka Khan and Rufus and Gladys Knight and the Pips. I mean, he was very, very active and involved. So one day we were talking, and he was telling me, he said, there were two things. One thing is that when Earth, Wind & Fire first came out, they were with Columbia. I mean, when they were with Columbia, and they Columbia told them their music was too jazzy. They were not commercial.
Not commercial enough, yeah.
And they stood strong and true to their music, and then all of a sudden when the people heard it, it took off.
Yeah.
Then the next thing you know, at least here in the States, everybody was, you know, everybody's trying to sound like Earth, Wind & Fire. Mm,
they were a big inspiration. So he was telling me,
yes, right? So then he was saying, one of the things that they did, and this has stuck with me to this day, he said, the way they approached the albums is, if this song hold up by as a single by itself? Oh no, okay, let's throw it out. We're not going to use it.
Yeah.
And so they didn't do anything that someone would consider, or they would consider, filler music on an album. Mm. They approached it as if each album,
every track was quality.
Each song, right? Each single, I mean, each song on that album could stand out as a single alone. And so that's how I approached, that's how I've approached all my albums, and that's how I approached this one. So it's a hard question, because I know what the stories are behind each song.
Yeah.
And so each story stands alone. It's pretty profound as it stands alone. I mean, Take a Walk with Love, it's fun. It just depends on where your space is when you're listening to it, you know.
My two favorites are track one and track two, Take a Walk with Love and I Choose Love. They're my favorites.
Take a Walk with Love and what?
And I Choose Love.
Yeah.
I like those. But I, you know, I've got to say, the whole album is. is really good. And I do recommend that if you haven't heard album yet, please do go and have a listen to it and purchase, because it's
quality album. Like Beautiful Girl. Yeah. Like Beautiful Girl. That is an anthem for women, you know, young girls, especially teenagers, young adults. You're beautiful. You know, you are meant to bring blessings to the world. You're beautiful, beautiful girl, you know. That's for women, you know. Then there's We Can Make It. Now, We Can Make It is a duet that I do with another singer, an upcoming singer named Patrice Williams. And Patrice used to be in the young adult choir at my church that I used to direct. And she would always say, you know, I want to sing with you sometimes. So when this project came up, I actually approached her first about being one of the contributors for the book.
Yeah.
Because she has a really good story to tell. And so she was, yeah, she'd love it. So I said, you know what, since she's telling the story, I'm going to get her involved in singing one of the songs with me, and we'll dedicate that song to her story.
Why not?
And so Alexander Thomas and I, that's my old music director from Earth, Wind & Fire, and he and I co-wrote, we started writing a song in 1978, and he and I did a little demo of it, and we sang it together as a duet. It was never finished. It was before I got my record deal with Capitol. And then when I got my the next year when I got my deal with Capitol, you know, we were going in a different direction. You know, the focus was on me as a solo artist on my guitar. So what happened when we did this project, I called Alex and I said, and we keep up with each other all the time. I said, Alex, so there's, you know, that song we did, We Can Make It. We never finished it, but I was listening to it, and it would go perfect for this new project and one of the stories in this project. And so I said, let's finish it. And so we finished it. And then I invited Patrice Williams to come into the studio, and we did it. We did the vocals on it.
Wow.
And that's another anthem, but it's not just for women. It's for everyone. So each song has a story. Oh, and then I got to tell you this song. Now, this is a really interesting kind of song, and it probably sounds like it because of where it's coming from. So we're finished with the album, right?
Yep.
And the lockdown has happened. And I'm trying to think. We were almost finished. I think we had to mix a few things still. And so there was, my son does, he's very talented. And so he sent me this track, and I was like, oh my gosh, this track, we got to use it. And so I called Steve Barry Cohen, who engineered the project, and, you know, he production assistant and co-produced a couple of things and co-wrote a couple of things. And we've been working together for over 20 years. So I said, Steve, I said, this is going to be a challenge. I said, but we've got to do this song. Can you help me finish writing it? I'm going to send you WAV files of the track that my son did. And I'm going to come up with a melody and the lyrics and if you come up with some musical stuff. So what he did is this part was easy because you take the WAV file. You could do it on the computer. So he added all the elements, keyboards that he added, et cetera, et cetera. And so so I couldn't go into the recording studio to record my voice. So I'm like, how are we going to do this? The song's called Salt and Light, Rise Up, right? And I decided, you know, hey, friend, how you been? I know you've been wondering, you know, out of the darkness will come the sunshine again, then we'll rise higher and higher, then we'll shine. But I was talking about what was going on at that time with the pandemic. So we're at the very beginning of this pandemic. Folks are passing. They're dying from it. You know, it's just crazy. And so here I am at my office / music room, and I'm recording my lead vocals in the background for it. So my son adds a little background's kind of rough. I didn't want it polished because I wanted to reflect the vibe of this song. I call it my pandemic song, right? So here I am at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's July by this time of the year in summertime. We have a heat wave. It's over 100 something degrees. And I have to turn the fan off. I have to turn all electrical things off so there's no noise. And then I find everything's off, and I'm singing, you know, on this recording instrument I have. And I can hear a hum. Like, where is that hum coming from? And it was coming from the light, the overhead light. You know, the switch was on the light. It was the hum and electric. So I had to turn it off. Here I am, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, because it's the quietest time. No fan, 100-something degrees. I'm just dripping from perspiration, and I'm singing in the dark. It takes me 3 days to do the lead in the background for that song, and I was at it at least three hours each of those days, and it was painful. I was almost in tears. I said, no, I've got to do this. I'm going to do it. And so we finished it and added it. So
that's amazing.
Just, you get me started talking, you can see what happens.
So, I mean, you touched on the pandemic there, and of course, it's affected everybody in different ways, hasn't it? I mean, it's been a difficult time. And was it, I mean, I guess you've touched on it. It must have been kind of difficult to try and put an album together with all the constraints and, all the social distancing as well, wasn't it?
It was challenging. But the good thing was that we had most of it done before the pandemic hit. So we finished a lot of it, or we're finishing a lot of it towards the end of 2019. Mm-hmm. Spent a lot of time in November, December of 2019, and January of 2019 finishing up. We did the music video for I Choose Love the weekend. We finished the weekend and before everything shut down in March. We finished and the next day just made it. And it was done by a young man I've known since he was a little boy, Lance Bernard Mitchell. And, we had a limited budget. He says, whatever, I'll work with you. He said, I'll make it like it's a $1 million music video. And it's very social, you know. So the thing is that I had no idea when I started working on this project 3 years ago that we would be going through what we've been going through in the last year and a half, two years.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Mm. And the songs are so relevant to what's going on right now with the pandemic and the social justice issues that are out there. And so my thing is, I want everybody to get it and have it in their home. You know, half the battle is, finishing it. But the other half is making sure that people get it in their homes, their hearts, so they can hear it.
Yeah.
And that is my prayer and my hope that, people will go and check it out, because then that makes artists that are out there doing what we do, and it makes it so much more
special. Yeah, definitely.
Right, because then otherwise I just would be creating music, and listening to it myself.
Yeah.
And that's not the purpose. I live to get my music. I live to create music, and then I live even stronger. I live even stronger get it to other people to hear.
As we always say, if you like it, buy it, because you are then supporting the artist to carry on. You know, without the people listening to the music, without the people buying it, it's so hard to fund new projects these days. It costs a lot in terms of getting people together and studio time and everything. So you must always support. And this is a great album. And as I said before, check it.
Yeah.
Definitely check it out. Now, Sherry, when you're not making music, you've raised a family, you're married. what do you kind of like to do to as downtime when you're not in the studio and not singing?
Well, one of the things that I used to really like to do is go to the movies. And so, of course, that there's been a big pause on that. And I don't know how soon I'll be going to the movies theaters. That's going to take some time for me to want to go back.
Yeah,
That's one of the things. But I love to also cook and entertain with my family.
Have you got a favorite?
It was very challenging. You know, I don't have a favorite dish because I'm a good. I pride myself in being a good cook. As I've become older, I enjoy it more, and I'm always experimenting.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't even remember what I cooked. So it's like, this is so good. I've had a couple of bombs, but for the most part, I like to cook. I'm trying to think. Tacos. I love tacos, but I have food allergies, so I can't eat all the things I used to be able to eat. I used to make the best tacos. And folks, I don't know if you all know what tacos are.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we have tacos.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, tacos, and I do very well with fish. Mm. I have a new lamb recipe that a friend of mine gave me, so I've been, doing that, and I like to grill. So I like, I haven't done it in a long time. I did it around Easter this year, but I paint.
Oh, really?
And so I like, yes, I paint. I like to do that, but I don't usually have time to do that. I like going to the beach and being with the ocean. That is.
Yeah. Well, where you live, it's beautiful for that, isn't it? The beaches are nice.
Yes.
Yeah,
we're about depending on which beach you go to, we could be anywhere. The closest beach would probably take us 15-20 minutes to get to from our home.
That's good.
In the car.
Mm. So anyway, Sherry, tell everybody the new album Messages from Spiritville on Expansion Records. Tell us where we can get hold of that and all your other music as well.
You can get Messages from the Spirit, the Collective. You can get it through Amazon.com. You can get the actual CD. You can get it directly from Expansion, their website. And then the digital downloads are available on almost, all the streaming platforms. Mm. Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify. You can get that. But the fun thing about getting the actual CD is being able to see the credits and know who's singing, since I have a number of special guests.
Yeah, that's always good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, you've got a website as well, which is realsherrybrown.com. So check that out as
Yes,
well.
And it's spelled S-H-E-R, one R-E-E, and then Brown.
Brown. Realsherrybrown.
So, and then you can see some of my other products, and there's something on there about with the children's. I can get the children's CD and the book, the children's book. And we're planning on having the book for this Messages from the Spirit, the collective music. We're planning on having that, hopefully by the end of the fall of this year.
Excellent.
What about
the future? Have you got anything else planned for the future at the moment?
I'm working on a couple of projects that are related to the music and the stories, and pitching some things for some shows. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it? We just want to get live music back, really, don't we? It's kind of it's been over a year now, and certainly in the UK, we're looking forward to sort of the end of June as being the time when live performances can start again. So fingers crossed.
Now here's something that's fun. in March as a part of Women's History Month.
Yep.
And to celebrate the release of my album, which was released March the 5th, I actually did a live performance, an intimate, I call it an intimate acoustic set from the world stage here in Los Angeles in the middle of Leimert Park.
Yep.
Three of the musicians that were involved in this project are performing with me. And so you can, it's on YouTube where if folks want to see it, you go to World Stage YouTube. I'm not sure if it's the World Stage or World Stage /YouTube. So it was done, I think the show was like March the 20th, the Saturday, March the 20th.
Yep.
And it was really a lot of fun. I mentioned expansion during that show, but it's fun. It's a fun show, and so if folks want to see a live performance, that's a great way to do it until I'm able to actually be live in person.
Definitely. Well, let's hope that is soon, and yes. Let's hope you do return back to the UK very, very soon as well, because we'd love to see you again.
And
we shall just look forward to that. But Sherry,
I appreciate all of you.
It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You are one of my icons, just let's say. It's been an absolute pleasure tonight to speak to you here on the Surrey Hills Soul Train, and good luck with the latest album, and I'm sure that it will do well, and I'm sure that it will bring a lot of happiness to a lot of Sherry Brown fans out there.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate all the folks out there. I really do.
You're very welcome. Sherry Brown, thank you for joining us on the First Class Lounge this evening.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was good.